Well, once again, to the hour of the time.
Thanks, Bill. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tonight, we decided that we're going to talk about some of the symbology connected with the rites of Freemasonry, the secret symbols of identification, and things of that nature. Wherever you want to start, go right ahead.
Okay, well, all the important symbols and passwords are incorporated into the first three degrees. The handshake, I think, is the most widely used Masonic symbol. It consists of an ordinary handshake, except the thumb of the person who is a Mason goes onto the third knuckle of the right hand of the person he's shaking hands with. If you've ever shaken hands with somebody and they seem to have a funny grip, or possibly even, I always thought it seems kind of feminine to me because the hand just wasn't strongly wrapped around your hand when you're shaking hands with somebody, you can have a pretty good idea that they're trying to feel you out and see whether you're a Mason like they are. The first two degrees, that was the hand grip of the third degree. The first two degrees are the same, except the first degree, the thumb goes on the first knuckle, and the second degree, the thumb goes on the second knuckle. But those are very, very rarely used.
And in the master Mason, or the third degree, the thumb is on the third knuckle. That's correct?
Yes, sir. And
how would you reply to that if you were, in fact, a Freemason?
You do the exact same. It becomes a combined grip, and your thumb is on his third knuckle, and his thumb will be on your third knuckle. And you can't miss it if somebody tries to slip you this handshake.
Well, it's not really a true handshake in the sense of the word that most people have learned to shake hands. You don't have a full grip of the other person's hand, but rather you just have a sort of a loose grip on their fingers, and your thumb is either on the first, second, or third knuckle, and you're sort of digging with that thumb to try to get a reaction to see if the other person is indeed a Freemason, and at what level.
That's true. That's true. And if they do not respond as such, the person will withdraw his hand quickly. But if he's not sure, he'll seem to kind of extend his grip just a little bit to kind of give you a chance to return the sign. They call it a sign.
Now, besides the handshake, what other signs or signals are used to identify one Freemason to another?
The most subtle one, and the one that you often have to look out for in public places, is how a man stands. The position of his feet will be a dead giveaway. Most people stand in just a leisurely position with their feet pointing outward just slightly. But a Freemason will stand with his feet in an exact square at a right angle, heel to heel. This is the step, they call the step of a master Mason. The step of an entered apprentice, a first degree Mason, is where the feet form a sort of T with the heel going to the cup of the other foot. And the second degree is an inverse of the third degree with another square being formed.
So if you see someone standing in a room with their two heels joined together and their feet forming a perfect right angle or a 90-degree angle, you can pretty much bet that that's such an unnatural stance that is a dead giveaway, that person is a Master Mason.
Unnatural and uncomfortable, I might add. Anybody who stood there, you're forced to stand like this when you become initiated. And also when you return the ritual, you have to do memory work and memorize the ritual and then give it back before you are raised to the sublime degree of a Master Mason. It's a dead giveaway because nobody stands like that naturally. It's just not a comfortable position to stand.
And why would someone stand like that? Would they do that in a room full of strangers to let other Freemasons who might be in the room know that it's okay to come and have some kind of a fellowship with them because they're a Freemason?
I myself have stood just like that for that very purpose. Because it's just noticeable. It's a way of broadcasting who you are and talking to the rest of the world without the rest of the world being able to interpret what exactly you are saying.
In other words, if you're not a Mason, you might look over and say, boy, that guy's kind of a nut. Look at the way he's standing. Whereas a Freemason would say, that's a brother of the craft. I'm going to go and meet this fellow.
Absolutely. That's generally the way it works. Most people just aren't aware of all these signs and symbols incorporated into the craft, but a Mason lives and breathes these things. Every time he goes to lodge, he takes on this position. He does the hand signals. He usually gives the handshake to his fellow brothers just to keep in practice. These things are so much a part of Masonry and of Masons that they spot him wherever they go.
Okay, so we know the handshake, we know the heel to heel and the right angle. We talked in the last broadcast about I raise my hand to the square or I raise my arm to the square. And what are some of the others?
Well, the others are the hand signals, and these are also used in every single lodge meeting. And these are, to Masons, these are what are most easily and most commonly used to communicate between Masons their identity. Of the first degree, the hand signal is you take your left hand, palm upward, and put it near your waist, and then your right hand, palm downward, just above your left hand, forming a bit of a cube, and you hold your hands like such. And that's the symbol of the hand signal of the first degree. Now, the penal sign, as they call it, is taking your right hand and drawing it in a slashing motion across the neck. And this refers to the penalty of the first degree, which is having your throat slit from ear to ear.
Now, if this were truly a benevolent fraternal organization, why in the world would they have an oath and a penal sign to tell other members that they could have their throats slit? And there are many others, depending upon what degree and what oath we're talking about. Why would they do that if they were really and truly a benevolent fraternal organization, bearing in mind that grown men take their oaths very seriously if they understand the oaths and they're not being defrauded or lied to when they take the oath, and fully intend to carry out whatever oaths that they take? This is not a joke. They're not children. This is not play on the playground.
The question answers itself. You're absolutely right. This is not a joke. In fact, it's deadly serious. These are the heart secrets of the majority of the craft. Even though they're not illuminated brethren, even though they don't really know what's going on around them or what they're doing, they have sworn to keep these secrets above all else, because this, if a non-Mason or a member of the profane knows these secrets, he can just walk right into a lodge and sit down and be exposed to everything within.
I hope you're listening, folks. Now, just for the benefit of our listeners or someone who may have just tuned in, or any of your fellow brother Masons out here who may be listening, now you took the oath, but you're revealing the secrets. Why are you revealing the secrets if you took the oath?
Because I took the oath under a fraudulent contract as such. I was told that it was a benevolent organization, that it dealt with charity, that it was arranged around God. All three of those things are bold-faced lies, and I can prove their falsehood. In fact, anybody can prove their falsehood with just a moment's bit of research. There are many more reliable sources than I for information that you can go to find out the true nature of this craft, and many religions in the world, including the Baptist and the Mormons, have condemned Freemasonry as being exactly what it purports not to be. It's not benevolent, it's not charity organized, and it's not centered around God.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that the Mormons have condemned Freemasonry when they carry out the exact same rituals that are carried out in Masonic Lodge in their temple ceremonies. And most Mormons are indeed, as was Joseph Smith, members of the Masonic Lodge. Our research shows that the public statements of the Mormon Church are often, and I mean often, contradictory to their true beliefs and what they really practice in their daily lives in within the temple. They are, in fact, a secret society, a secret organization that practices the same rites as the Masonic Lodge within their temple, and have the same goal, and that is that the practitioners of the religion of the Mormon Church will in fact become God. And that is, of course, what the other secret societies, and we're talking right now the Freemasons, they're really all the same organization. They're working toward becoming God.
It is. It's a quest after Godhood, and all I can say about the Mormons, and there are many, many similarities to Masons, is that a pagan is a pagan is a pagan. It's nature worship. They believe in the laws of the universe as being what they have to answer to, and if you know these laws, you can manipulate the populace. It's elitism at its very best.
Now, let me ask you this for the benefit of our listeners also. Many people write me letters and say, hey, my dad or my uncle or my cousin or my friend is a Freemason, and I've asked him about these things, and they've told me that it's not true, that it's all a lie. Will Freemasons lie to hide the truth?
Every single time, if the truth will give away what they don't want to give away. In fact, I've been lied to by brothers in the craft that are allegedly or supposedly teaching me and instructing me in what goes on. If they told the truth, it would scare away their members and it would end up in universal condemnation of what they're doing. No reasonable and moral person could possibly subject themselves to such bloody oaths and to such total secrecy.
Not only that, but the oaths themselves, they're sworn to secrecy. So if you were to ask them to tell you the secrets or the truth about the practices, the rituals, the true religion of the Masonic Lodge, they are sworn not to tell you. So therefore, they would have to lie. And the only reason that you are telling is because you discovered that the oaths that you had taken and the purposes for which you thought the Masonic fraternity was organized, it just is not true at all. So therefore, everything that you participated in under fraudulent conditions.
That is exactly true. And as such, I don't consider myself to be bound by those oaths because I was lied to before I entered into those oaths. This is common law. This is the law of many lands. It also makes perfect common sense that both parties have to know what is going on in all terms of the contract before they can be held accountable for their deeds within that contract.
That's correct. And the oaths that you took, you thought were for a different purpose and to a different God than the God that you discovered and the purpose that you finally discovered. So folks out there, when you go and ask your relatives or your friends or your cousins or your business associates questions about the lodge, about Freemasonry, about any secret society, no matter what name it is, the Rosencross, Knights Templars, the Knights of Malta, the Order of St. John of Jerusalem, any of these people, they cannot and will not tell you the truth because it is forbidden to them. And in fact, if they do, they could find themselves suffering the consequences of the very oaths they took not to reveal these secrets. Now, what are some of the other signs that we have not discussed?
Okay, I covered the first degree. The second degree we've also partially covered. The sign of the second degree is to hold your right arm extended outward with the elbow at a right angle and the hand facing up, palm forward. And the penal sign of that is to draw your right hand across your chest from left to right in a claw-like motion. It refers to the penalty of the second degree, which is to have your breast torn open and your heart and vitals taken thin and given as to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. That's an exact quote from the ritual, by the way. And the third degree consists of both hands, palm down, extended outward at the waist, and then you draw the hands across the waist from left to right, which refers to have your body torn in twain, which is the penalty of revealing the secrets of the third degree, to have your body torn in twain and the parts carried north and south. That is, again, a direct quote from the ritual.
So the first one is the recognition signal, and the second is what you call the penal sign.
Yes, that's true.
And are there other signs and signals connected with Freemasonry?
There are many others. There is a recognition signal and a penal sign for every single degree in Freemasonry, and I have been through the 32nd degree and have experienced all these recognition signals and penal signs. But all the signs after the third degree are not nearly as important as the first three. And so the reason for this is because Masons in general are just not invited to know all the secrets of the order. It is not uncommon to know a Mason, as you stated before, who never ever advances beyond the third degree. And I should state now that a Mason who is in the third degree, he can be the master of his lodge, the worshipful master, they call it, of his lodge, which is an elected office, a bit like president, that lasts for 1 year. Not all Masons are in the Scottish Rite or the Shrine or the Yorkish Rite, but all Masons do know the signs of the first three degrees and the penal signs.
In fact, most Masons are really only guilty of joining an organization they know nothing about and for giving it protection and favor and helping it along, but they really don't know what it's all about, do they?
True. They don't. They're as ignorant as I was. And if they're out there listening, I'd like to say that you can follow the exact same path I have followed. Now that you know the truth about the craft, whether you believe me or not, you should go out and verify for yourself. And once you do verify for yourself, you are no longer bound by those oaths either. They are fraudulent, and they're ridiculous, unreasonable, and brutal in many ways.
Not only that, but once you do know about it, you are no longer innocent, but you are, if you don't do something about it, or leave the lodge, or do as this young gentleman is doing, help us to relieve ourselves from the yoke of these secret societies who are planning on stripping us of our freedoms and our rights. If you don't, then you are a fellow conspirator and are just as guilty as those who have always known. And you better understand that, because I'm telling you right now, patriots in this country are getting fed up. And the purpose of this show is to prevent bloodshed. We want to wake people up and do something about this while we can, legally and lawfully, because, folks, there will come a day when people will not take it anymore, and they will take weapons in hand, unfortunately. We can see it coming. Anybody with half a brain can look around and talk to people and see that that day is going to come, because nothing's getting better. It's only getting worse. And we don't want that to happen. That's why we're doing this. That's why I've dedicated my life. And that's why I've suffered so much in my life to try to wake people up, is to prevent that kind of thing. And they are dead set upon seeing their dream come true, aren't they, Will?
They have dedicated their lives, their labors, and indeed their entire faith to this. And you have not exaggerated or overrated the problem at all. This is dangerous, people. These men mean business. The Scottish Rites themselves have taken a public stance totally in support of public education by the government. Now, all you need to do is look at how screwed up your schools are, and then turn around and look how screwed up your kids are, and you've got a big, big, rich organization out there with incredible political power and widespread influence that is supporting this current failed system. This is just one isolated example. If you are not part of the solution, and you have even been just a teeny bit exposed to the truth, then you are part of the problem.
That's correct. And we know that public education, conducted and supervised and organized and funded by the government, is one of the planks of the Communist Manifesto, written by Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. Now, why would Americans ever support such a thing? The strength of our educational system before it began to self-destruct was that it was always handled, funded, and governed, and maintained, and approved, and everything else, on a local level. In other words, the school system in my town might be different from the school system in someone else's town 100 miles away, but it would be controlled, governed, decided, textbooks would be chosen, everything on a local level. Our schools did not begin to self-destruct until the state got into the school system, and then the federal government began to poke into it, and specifically when the teachers' colleges funded by the Carnegie, the Ford, and the Rockefeller Institutes began to change what they taught teachers to teach children. And when that happened, when it became an organized, funded, dictated to type thing, then it began to fall apart. And the less control of the local level, the less our children are educated.
You've hit the nail right on the head. As you've stated in your own book, Behold a Pale Horse, the true enemy is not communism, but Illuminism. When the Berlin Wall fell and the Eastern Europe was opened up, it wasn't all the American companies that beat up path to their door to go open up these markets and make money. There were two groups, and they were both religious in nature. One were the evangelists who went over there to try to spread the word of their religion, and the other were Freemasons who stepped in just the very moment that the communists stepped out. Already, lodges have been consecrated in St. Petersburg and Moscow and in several other major cities, and they're just popping up all over. You've got people, very old men, who actually remember when the lodges were around before Stalin wrapped them out, and they're bringing them back to replace the communist masters that they just got rid of.
And the only reason that Stalin did away with the lodges in the Soviet Union was because Stalin was a 33rd degree Freemason. He knew how he had risen to power. He knew what the organization was, and he didn't want them turning against him, so he got rid of it.
Absolutely. There's the verses. They got him, just like Hitler, they got him to where he wanted to be, and he's not going to let anybody get put him out of place with the same tools that he rose to power with.
Okay. Well, this we're making a lot of progress here. If you were to walk into a room and see two grown men hugging, what would you look for as identifying traits that would tell you that these two men hugging were Freemasons?
There is a certain pattern ritual that goes that has something to do with that. It deals with the interchange of one of the most secret passwords of Freemasonry, and you must stand foot to foot with another Mason, knee to knee, hand to back, and mouth to ear, and then whisper the secret word in a very low voice. And I'm not going to do any of those things. I'm just going to tell you the word is Mahabam, and I don't even know what it means, but I do know where it comes from, and it comes from the ancient Hindu religion, which is the original pagan religion, and many of the other secret words in Freemasonry are of the exact same source.
And they call this the five points of fellowship, do they not?
They do. You've done your homework, though.
Well, I know more about Freemasonry and the secret societies than most members of Freemasonry and the secret societies ever will. I was, as I've told my listeners, and as I've published in my book, a member of DMLA when I was a teenager. I went to exactly three meetings, and DMLA, folks, is a branch of Freemasonry for children, for teenagers, actually. And I attended three meetings, and my father was transferred to Japan, and I never attended another meeting ever, but I do believe that that's what got me, in fact, I know it is, that's what opened the door for me to enter as a member of the Office of Naval Intelligence many years later. When I filled out my forms for security clearance, there was nothing on there for the Order of DMLA, but I knew that it was a branch of Freemasonry, so I checked Freemasonry. And by golly, all of a sudden, things began to open for me that had never opened for me before, and which most people who are not Freemasons find impossible to enter into. And I was surprised for a while and a little mystified until I discovered the real reason. But every member of Naval Intelligence that I ever met was a Freemason, and most of them wore their rings. What are these rings? How can someone identify the ring of a Freemason?
Sticks out like a sore thumb. It looks a bit like a fraternity ring or a football ring or any other signet ring. And on the very top of the ring will be a square and compass set in what looks like a large A shape, with the square on the bottom and the compass on the top, forming what looks a bit like an A, but it's not. You can tell how seriously one takes their position in the craft. The Masons who are really there for genuine reasons, philanthropic and charity work, they have their square and compass facing to them. And those that are trying to impress and enforce the buddy system that got you in Naval Intelligence and the back scratching whole thing, they wear theirs facing the outside to tell everybody else in the world who they are.
But really, the only ones who really know, unless you were to ask them what that ring meant, are our fellow craft Masons.
Absolutely.
I shouldn't say fellow craft, that's the second degree. our fellow brothers of the Lodge. Okay, folks, we've got to take our break. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short pause. Welcome back to the Hour of the Time. Will, you've got something there you want to say, I think.
I'd like to give a little message to my brother Masons out there. I know that all those who are listening are thinking some pretty hard thoughts about me. You think of things like that I'm a traitor to the craft. Well, I'm thinking that you're a traitor to your country. And if you think that I've betrayed my brothers, I feel that you've betrayed me with your deception. If you believe that I've broken my oath, and even if those oaths are valid, something that I do not believe, I think they're null and void, well, then I just have to say this, so what? We all got to go. Now, my brothers can go quietly into slavery, living a lie and burying their heads in the sand, or you can go like a man, squarely facing the truth and fighting for freedom. I honestly believe this, and I honestly believe that the whole nature of the craft is sinister.
Wow, that's quite a statement there, and I certainly admire you for saying that. I had no idea that you were going to do that. In fact, you showed me the piece of paper just as the music was beginning to fade out and indicated to me that you wanted to say something. So, yeah, wow, that's pretty good. Okay, let's get on into the rest of the program. What are some of the are there other signs and signals that the secret societies, Freemasons in general, use to identify themselves to each other?
I've never been a member of any other secret society besides Freemasonry, and much to my joy and to your good fortune out there, I've already told you most of the secrets that are protected by the craft, as far as the common layman of the craft will know, with the exception of one, And that is concerning Hiram Abiff, who is a bit of a patron saint, I guess, of Freemasonry. Somebody they pulled from the Bible and turned into a character to give a meaning to their ritual. When two Masons come together, one of the easiest ways that they'll come to know each other without having to shake hands, hug in the middle of the street, or do little foot dances or whatever kind of nonsense that they're doing out there, they'll just come up and say, "Well, hi, Hiram, how you doing? Hello, Mr. Abiff." Or if you want to catch a Mason on the phone, you just tell him that H. Abiff is calling, and believe me, you'll get service right away.
Well, that's good to know. We can certainly use information like that. But we know that some of the symbols and signals and signs used in the Masonic order were also used by the Knights Templars and others. So this didn't come strictly from this one society, but literally they are all one. What are some of the vocal signals, the speech, what words, besides Hiram Abiff, what else would you say to someone to solicit whether or not they were in fact Freemasons?
One of them that I've also come across, and I've seen this in writing, and it was a bit of a mystery to me until I sought some advice about it. They'll ask each other if they're a traveling man, and what they mean by, and this comes directly from the old Templar ritual, and it stands as a positive factual link of the continuity between ancient secret societies and modern Freemasonry, is they'll ask if they're a traveling man. And the meaning behind that is one traveling from west to east, east being the source of knowledge.
Or illumination.
Yeah.
It's also the point where the sun rises, which goes back to the first religion, which was the cosmology, where all of these religions and secret societies sprang from, which was the worship of the sun. The source of illumination, the source of warmth, the source of all life, the source of everything, rises in the east every morning, and is, in fact, for those who really understand, the morning star. Is that not correct?
Absolutely, and that gives a great illumination, if I may say so, as to why the worshipful master sits in the east of the lodge, and also why during the ritual, when a young unknowing Freemason like myself is brought in and has a degree conferred upon him, he circumnavigates it as he walks around in a circle from all the points of the lodge, going from the worship master in the east to the junior warden in the south to the senior warden in the west and then back to the master in the east. He is traveling as the earth travels around the sun in a circle of worship. And it might even be a direct reference to Solomon's circle. And if you told me yourself, Bill, about the traveling man, that too has been used by communists, hasn't it?
Yes, in fact, anybody who knows anything about the International, or the secret society known as the International, the International, the Communist Party, the International Socialists, Socialism, if you studied them, the same passwords are used by them. All of these organizations are one. Socialism stems from the mystery schools. That's where it comes from. You'll find that most of the mystery schools preach the tenets of the communist